All righty, always a lot of fun. A great first hour. You heard from Philip Eng, the LIRR president, State Senator Monica Martinez, Corey Stern on the Flint, Michigan stuff, and Harvey Weinstein. And now we have a potpourri of a discussion in and around with our good pal, Mr. Campolo, Joseph Nicholas Campolo, the great firm I talk about on a daily basis, Campolo, Middleton, McCormick, three locations, soon to be four, CMMLLP.com. And now you have Westbury, Bridgehampton, and, of course, Ron Conkman. Soon a fourth. We'll find out if maybe we can maybe get it out of him today. We'll see. As always, a pleasure. Joe, how are you?
Jay, morning. I'm doing great. How you doing?
I am doing well. Is there enough around that for you to keep on top of so many, you know, different things in the world today? I mean, my goodness, it's like a plethora of material to choose from these days, Joe.
Job security for you, my friend. I mean, every day, you know, I had an interesting and maybe we'll get a minute or two to talk about it, but I had an interesting time last week moderating the legislative breakfast for HILI. We had Congressman Zeldin, County Executive Ballone, Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan, Mike Fitzpatrick, Ed Wareheim, and Bill Mannix from the town of Islip. And I'll tell you, Jay, there is just so much going on in this world, so much going on in our island, so much going on in the country, so much going on in the world. Your head spins trying to understand and process as much as going on in this whole world. So hats off to you for doing a good job keeping us focused on issues and priorities, man. I don't know how you do it, but you do a terrific job.
You know, it just goes on and on and on. You know, let's start off with the bail reform. We just spoke with Senator Martinez. Joe, I don't know if you heard some of it, but, you know, some want to put the brakes on it, some don't. I've spoken to four senators, you know, that were backing this thing. You know, Jim Gorin, one of the architects, you know, doesn't even want to put a moratorium on this thing. I vehemently objected to it, you know, based on what's happening in and around. I mean, how do you not want to do that? You know, he would rather amend and then take it to the floor for a vote. Too much time would elapse. Too many things could happen. I don't want to see any more Jordan Randolphs let out on the street, Joe. You know, at this point in time, listen, as an attorney of your stature, you could certainly sympathize with, you know, with what's going on here. Disclosure, discovery, there are flaws here, major flaws, and that's why I think this thing needs to be stripped down to the roots and start all over again here.
Yeah, I totally get that and appreciate it. And you know, in an impassioned speech Senator John Flanagan gave to about 400 business people last week, on this issue, he made great points, Jay. You know, I know it's a bipartisan issue, but John made really, really good points insofar as what was the rush? Why couldn't law enforcement be brought into the decision-making process? Why weren't the sheriffs spoken to? Why weren't judges spoken to and getting feedback from them? Why was there such an imminent rush? You know, on such an issue that could impact public safety so much, right? And it's a fair point. That's a terrific and fair point. That's not a bipartisan point. That's a New York citizen's point. You know, we have to have confidence, I think, when laws are enacted, particularly laws that affect criminal justice on both sides, laws that are going to take away rights, laws that are going to give more rights, you know, to those that have been arrested, you know, which I don't necessarily think are bad things, but we should have confidence as citizens. We should have confidence that the bodies empowered with making these laws have deliberated them, have talked to experts, and have gotten all opinions on it before casting a vote. And to find out that really none of that occurred was shocking to me to find that all out and disheartening, because now I don't have a lot of confidence in terms of who's really making sure that public safety is being watched and being taken care of, you know, seriously. I mean, this is, you know, the age-old problem that New York State finds itself in all the time, and that is, you know, when it comes to reforming the laws and giving away more liberties and stuff, that's great. But they never want to fund the judges. They don't want to hire more judges. So they cause the dockets to become overloaded with cases. They don't want to hire more law enforcement and pay overtime for the correction officers. So now, how is this all going to be administered? How is safety being managed in the process while we're figuring that all out? And at the end of the day, where are all these cases going, being they're not going to be hiring new judges? So, I really feel it's just one of those situations where, everybody agrees that incarceration isn't necessary for certain people. Everybody agrees that the incarceration costs are very, very high, but there should have been a more methodical way to have dealt with this and gotten the information. And, hats off to Senator Flanagan. He really made an impassioned statement to the business community, that I thought was spot on.
Listen, I agree. The biggest question I have, I'm not very confident right now in the speaker and Carl Hastie. He's saying that it's too early in the year to even form an opinion. I don't know what where he's looking as far as the newspaper is concerned. I don't know if he's reading the Inquirer or anything, People Magazine, rather than the Albany Times Union. I mean, my goodness. I mean, there are 10 cases a day of people being incarcerated, let out, back to jail, on the street again, committing the same acts of crime. I can't figure that one out. I have a little more confidence in Andrea Stewart Cousins, majority leader of the Senate. She seems to at least want to listen, whereas Hastie does not, and that bothers me a lot. And what bothers me also is I've had four senators on, and I think, you have two, the last two, and Brooks and Martinez would like to put the brakes on this and talk about it, whereas Gorin does not. That bothers me as well, one of the architects of this darn thing. What bothers me is the Senator Michael Giannaris, a lead architect also, calls it fear-mongering. I don't know where he's from either. Calls fear-mongering anecdotal as far as some of the examples set out by the press. I'm not being anecdotal when I cite the likes of a Jordan Randolph, the guy who killed Jonathan Flores Maldonado on the William Floyd a couple of Sundays ago, Joe. I mean, come on. This was a guy in and out of prison for drunken driving. My goodness, what do we got to do here? The Maria Campiones, the Tiffany Harrises with the anti-Semitic stuff? What more examples do you want? This thing has to be stripped and looked at from the embryonic stages again. Enough is enough of this nonsense. I'm so sick and tired of people thinking it's partisan this and partisan that. And we're not giving in, and we can't admit to a mistake. I can't take that anymore, Joe.
And you have a right to feel that way. I mean, when it comes to economic things, right? Sometimes people have to make rush decisions, and I understand that. When it comes to public safety and criminal justice on both sides, I think everybody deserves the utmost research and impact analysis on these types of legislation. Look, Jade, the governor and the Democrats handed the Republicans in New York a present with this one. I mean, I liken it to the Willie Horton issue that came up, during Bush Dukakis, because inevitably, and you know what, it's not fear mongering. Something's going to happen. Something's going to slip, and there's going to be a huge issue. And that's going to be on the Senate and the Assembly. That's going to be on them for having made this a rushed law. It could be a good law. Look, there are certainly two sides to this, and I totally understand and think, that the incarceration rates and levels of minorities, poor minorities, particularly in New York City, where this was being driven out of, this type of legislation is a fact. We have to address that. It's a fact. It does us disservice in this country and this state from a criminal justice perspective to have that, and we need to fix that. But rushing it for no reason didn't seem to make a lot of sense. And really, the Democrats gave the Republicans an endless campaign on this issue, which I think is going to be effective here in New York.
Let's see what happens. Still, it's not about just the judges. It's about the other aspects of what happens within the court. The discovery information, the rapid disclosure, all this stuff has to be fixed. It's not a minor tweak. It's not a little bit of a tweak here and a little tweak there. No. This is a complete overhaul what needs to be done here. And that's why, if you're not going to tell me you don't want to repeal, at least put the brakes on it. And let's discuss this rationally. Because right now, you know, even de Blasio, when de Blasio tells you something wrong, what does that say to you? I mean, the governor wants something. You know, he didn't really, you know, get into specifics. I would like to have heard something from the state of the state last week. You didn't get that. Acknowledged it yesterday. But in essence, you know, listen, I think deep down everybody knows this is a complete disaster. It has to be fixed. Joe Campolo with us. Little off the record, on the record, that brings us to impeachment, and here we go again. 2 a.m, Joe, you know, it ended. Get ready for day two, literally in 4.5 hours or so. Give me your take on aspects of day one, all that came about, and everything else to look forward to in the second day. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm following it. I'm following it as closely as I can, because it's certainly a historic moment, and as a history buff, I want to follow it. As a lawyer, I want to understand what's going on. But it's so different. So I followed the Clinton impeachment trial very closely as well. I was in law school at the time that Clinton was being impeached, and we followed it very, very closely. And what a difference! You know, 20-something years can make, Jay. You know, with the Clinton proceedings, both in the House and in the Senate, there was a seriousness, there was respect for each other, there were rules that were being agreed on, there was no shameless bipartisanship or partisanship by either side, and I get it. I understand why this particular House of Representatives decided to impeach. I understand that they wanted to put a bumper up here for President Trump and any future maverick presidents that are going to come, in our history. Congress has a right to do that. They do, but really, shame on everyone. Shame on everyone for being so shameless with the partisanship and really not trying to find any sort of truth as to what's going on here. You know, shame on the House for rushing through the investigation and then holding on to the articles for as long as they did. I think they held on to the articles longer than they actually did the investigation before delivering them. You know, shame on the Senate for being so so partisan and making it clear that they could care less as to what case is being presented here. There's going to be an acquittal. It really is just so painful to watch what's going on. But to the American people and to the listeners, you know, I say that there is a reason under our Constitution why this is happening. I do think for the long term health of the country, and I hope, you know, reasonable minds will prevail during this sort of crazy time. I do think for the overall health of our country, this is probably a good thing. It does help delineate the separations of powers. It does put bumpers on presidents. In the short term, in our lifetime now, Jay, what remains of an impeachment is going to become a much more common thing, I think, particularly when you include something like obstruction of Congress as an impeachable offense. Every president has, and every president likely will, exert executive privilege. That's clearly for the courts to decide. And, you know, the Democratic-controlled Congress made it clear that they brought an article of impeachment because they didn't want to wait for the courts to figure it out. And that just seems like an abuse of their own power, an abuse of their own investigatory power. So the whole thing on both sides is grandstanding. But there is, and the American people should know that there is, you know, some good that's going to come out of this as we continue to grow as a nation.
Listen, you know, to me, it's about Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. You know, Chuck getting the spotlight again. You know, don't tell him, Chuck, please. I can't take it anymore. I mean, to tell us all deep and solemn and the eyes of the founding fathers are upon us. I got to tell you, if they're watching, they're probably rolling over in their graves right now. I mean, my goodness. I mean, is this what they had in mind as far as day one of the impeachment trial? You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, every time you watch this stuff and, you know, you wonder what in the heck is going on here, accusing the president of blackmail of a foreign country. I think if I'm right, quoting Schumer there, committing a crime against democracy itself over a phone call? I mean, it's a little too over the top. I'm sorry, Joe. You know, to me, this is all about the failed Mueller report that they thought they had the president on. This is all about not thinking this guy would win the election in 2016. Let's face it. They all thought Hillary would sit in the Oval Office at this point in time. Not the case. They had a little bit of a window here to try if they can find something. Pelosi did, 33 days. She held the two articles and everything else, and here we go. Why wait so long? You know, I mean, it's just a circus. It's an absolute waste of time with the outcome that will be as sure as day itself. I mean, really, that's what it is. I mean, this is a complete waste of time. Thank goodness. You know, if you look at some of the accomplishments, at least that we have some sort of agreement with the USMCA, Mexico and Canada, trade, China, phase one, tariffs on hold, Wall Street booming, 29,000 plus, jobs added every month, unemployment 3.5%. Good things are happening in and around, trying to do your jobs. But in essence, this is what's going on Capitol Hill these days. This is what's happening. Again, that sliver of hope of trying to remove this guy from the Oval Office in an election year, an absolute disgrace in real time of what's really happening here.
Yeah, and, you know, I mentioned the legislative breakfast, and Congressman Zeldin was there, you know, and I did thank him publicly, and I do want to thank him here as well for showing up, because he originally had RSVP that he couldn't make it, and because he had a conflict, but because of all of what's going on in Washington, he felt very compelled to come and speak to the business folks. And it was good because we had over 350 business folks there, Jay. And the first question I asked him, you know, I said, I'll start with an easy one. Let's talk about impeachment. And everybody sort of laughed. And Lee did a nice job. I mean, what can he really say? You know, the House has completed its task. It's going to the Senate. He did a very, very nice job. But then he brought us all hope. Jay, he brought us all hope that that there is actually real people doing real things, you know, to make Long Island a better place. Because he spoke about the folks from Brookhaven National Lab were there, and I'd encourage you to try and get Lee on the show to talk about this with him in depth. But he talked about this really exciting project where the Department of Energy selected Brookhaven National Lab now for this electron ion collider. It's a $1.2 billion project. It's going to be the greatest thing in the world. Scientists from all over the world are going to be coming to Long Island, and he spoke eloquently about that. And the business community was so thrilled to hear that there are people in Washington getting things done. There are productive things coming out of Washington to help Long Island. And all of this, you know, charade of impeachment isn't stopping folks that we've sent to Washington to getting things done. And it's a really interesting story about how he was able to get the Department of Energy to give that to Brookhaven National Lab versus Virginia, and it gave me hope, Jay. It gave me hope that there are people out there working hard, even though when the cameras are on, they have to do this sort of media circus. It gave me hope that there are people working hard to bring results here back to Long Island, which was really terrific news.
That's an all-star lineup you guys had with Flanagan. Steve Ballone was there, I understand. Mike Fitzpatrick, the assemblyman. Eddie Wareheim, the supervisor of Smithtown. We had him on yesterday, Bill Mannix. That's a nice little breakfast with featuring those guys. That's good stuff. We'll get into that in a little while. Joe Campolo, a little off the record, on the record. Before we take a break, Joe, let's get into, you know, with all else, the final debate, Iowa last week. You know, that moment in time, Warren Sanders, you know, did you call me a liar on national television? You know, the comment by Sanders of maybe a woman can't be president, that type of thing. Who knows? Was it actually stated? We don't know for sure. Probably was. You know, I probably said it in some sort of way, but it irritated her without question. You know, before we get into the crux of it all, you have Iowa caucuses happening 20-some-odd days. Month after, you have Super Tuesday, shortly after New Hampshire Super Tuesday and all that. You know, this New York Times endorsement rubbed me the wrong way. Both, you're telling me? Both? Now, I got to tell you, at this point in time, endorsements really don't mean a hell of a lot to me, especially coming from the New York Times. I mean, when you're telling me you're endorsing two women for president, and Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, I mean, come on, can you pick one at least? You choose one individual as far as who you're endorsing. Instead, they're making a statement as far as the scorning of women, in my opinion, and trying to put that to rest by pleasing all, by pretty much stating the only two women really left in the race of meaning proportions, in that of Klobuchar and Warren. I didn't like it at all. Your take as far as the Times endorsement?
Yeah, initially when I saw the headline and I started reading it, I felt exactly the same way. I was like, wait, this is like such a, an endorsement. You have to take a position and you have to take a direction. You have to pick a candidate or else don't make an endorsement. What's the sense of that? I think the New York Times tried, and I don't know if it helped or hurt what they were trying to do, but I think what they tried to do was say, here's two women. Either one of them is set to be president, fit to be president, but they're totally different, right? Elizabeth Warren's going to take the country down a more progressive track. She's certainly a lot firmer in her style. She's a lot more set in her way of thinking. But we're okay if she's president. And here's Amy Klobuchar. And I've been saying from the very beginning that I was very impressed by Senator Klobuchar. I think that she's very intelligent. She's incredibly well thought out. Her opinions are moderate. She can reach across the aisle when needs be done, and that's what the endorsement said, that she's totally different stylistically, not as progressive, more moderate, able to reach across the aisle and get things done, and they're okay with that too. I would have preferred them to pick Amy Klobuchar. I think Klobuchar really can be a very strong candidate, and maybe it's not this cycle, maybe it's the next presidential cycle. Jay, I think that the first female president, it's Hillary Clinton couldn't get it done, and I mean, here's Hillary Clinton again yesterday, sort of trouncing on Bernie Sanders. I don't understand what she's doing that for. She's certainly not helping her party. She certainly is dying to be relevant, I guess, but she was just too much of a polarized figure to make it across the finish line. I think Amy Klobuchar is got the resume, she's got the demeanor, she's got the intellect, and she's got the ideas that can really put her front and center as someone who could really become the first female president. So, I would have hoped that the New York Times would have just endorsed her, but they hedged their bets by including Elizabeth Warren just because of the aggressive fundraising nature I think Elizabeth Warren is having as compared to Klobuchar. So, I get why they did it. I still think it was incredibly wishy-washy. But, you know, the New York Times, more than any other publication, I think the New York Times has disappointed me since 2016 and since Trump got inaugurated, because I was really, really hoping that they would not get so deeply partisan as they seem to have gotten. So I was, it was actually... they did an okay job when I'm already disappointed with the New York Times.
Well, listen to me. They're right in the line of the Washington Post. Same old rag, same old nonsense. I could put that paper to very good use these days. You know, the whole thing is they have gone down a very slippery slope in years past, 100% right. Very meaningless newspaper these days, when they used to be certainly on top of the mountain without question. Joe, we're going to take a quick break. Get people in tune in their travels and everything else. Still more to do. The great Joe Campo, a little off the record, on the record. Let's check out our travels on a chilly, chilly Wednesday as we go back to Nancy Remy with the latest. And we are back, a little off the record, on the record, with the great Joe Campo. Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick, ladies and gentlemen. That is the firm of choice, voted that way, business community, premier law firm as any, right here on Long Island. Don't forget the three locations, Westbury, Bridgehampton, of course, Ronkonkoma, soon to be a fourth. We'll get into that in just a couple of minutes. CMMLLP.com, 7391100, 631, of course, the main number. You know, Joe, I don't know how much more I chuckle at this point as far as, you know, what's happening with the Royals these days. You know, Harry on the plane heading to Vancouver to join Meghan and Archie, and here we go. Privacy, lawsuits, paparazzi beware. Wanting to get the exit, the Megxit, great headline by the Post last week. I love it. Listen, the only fault, I don't have any fault in their decision-making, I do have a little bit of fault as far as Meghan Markle is concerned. I got to be honest with you. I mean, if you're going to tell me you don't know what you're getting yourself into by marrying into this family, I mean, come on. I mean, you're an actress, you know, a well-known show, a very respected show, in Suits, you know, made some money, had a little bit of that Hollywood lifestyle. You know, all of a sudden, I'm going to be buttoned up, tea and crumpets at 4 o'clock sharp, beat me the queen. I mean, be careful here. I can't understand how you not know what exactly the life you're going to get yourself into. I don't like when the sister sounds off, Samantha. Don't like it at all. Stop it already. Nobody cares what you think. The father, I have a little bit of sympathy for. But in essence, I do not have a problem as far as a complete exit. Listen, Harry's had enough. He's had enough under the thumb of the father, the queen, the grandmother, Prince Philip, William, Kate. I can't take it anymore. Enough is enough. Let them live their lives in normal fashion in Vancouver. That's my take. What's yours?
Wow, Jay, you got a lot of passion on that issue, huh? I love it, man. I love it. Look, it's going to be very interesting. So here in America, we saw in 2015, 2016, we saw the impact that social media had on our presidential race, on our government, on our structure here. People have no idea where the impact of social media is going to lead society. It's just an amazing thing to watch. And now we see across the pond there, you know, the crown itself is now going to struggle because paparazzi has always been the bane of the crown's existence, and that's a strong thing to have media that's covering it, and certainly Harry seems very resentful towards the paparazzi for you know what happened to his mom and for the crown and how they handled it. And now we're in a totally different world. So now everybody's paparazzi. Now everybody with a cell phone is able to take pictures and post stories. And I think Harry just said enough. I'm not going to put my wife through this. This is absolutely insane. And he's checking out. And hats off to him. Hats off to him for doing it. I don't know where the monarchy and the crown is going to go with all this. I mean, you know, lurking in the wings still is what's going to come of Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein and the relationship there. You know, Bill Clinton and his interactions with that is starting to sneak back in now with some pictures surfacing. And social media, boy, oh boy, oh boy, can it be a difficult thing on somebody if it turns against them. And so I hope, and you're right, Jay, nobody can enter that life without, you know, understanding what it's going to be like, but to endure it day in and day out is unconscionable. And here's the guy saying, in my opinion, the way I look at it, here's the guy saying, I'm doing it for why? Like, I'm not going to be the future king of England. I'm not going to be happy in this role, so why do it? So hats off to him. I wish people would just give people peace and leave them alone. But I don't know that. I don't know the crown, you know, relevancy, you know, with social media, Jay. I just don't know where it takes it. You know, we have no idea where social media is leading society. We really don't. And it's amazing how quickly things can turn because of a simple post or a tweet. And so good for him and her for recognizing that early on and not wanting to bring their children up and trying to live a life that they have some control over. I hope it works out for them.
Hey, you know, the analysis is just too much for me. I mean, there was a show yesterday, I forgot which one, you know, they're actually analyzing the smile from Meghan had as far as when walking her dog in Vancouver Island and holding young Archie, you know, in one of these harnesses. You know, they were actually depicting the lines of the eye as far as the actuality of the smile, if it was real, if it was genuine. I'm saying to myself, you got to be kidding here. With all that's going on in the world, we're analyzing Mark Megan's smile as far as if it's genuine, you know, and criticism coming in on how she's holding Archie, young Archie in that harness. I mean, come on. I can't deal with it anymore. A great point, yeah, though, with Prince Andrew, you know, and I think one of the things also why there wasn't a lot of pushback from Buckingham Palace is because the Queen doesn't want any more egg on her face. She's had enough for 10 years from young Andrew at the time, old Andrew now out the door. But in essence, you know, they don't want any more headlines like that. And certainly, listen, all the guy wants to do is live his life with his wife and young son. Let him go back to civilian life. Break protocol, my goodness. They did. They'll analyze it in a year. And I'm sick and tired of hearing about the beef with brother William. William needs to grow up. William's the older one. How about extending an olive branch and figure out how you can kind of mend a relationship with your young brother there, sir? Enough is enough. Stop it already. Kate Middleton as well. I'm tired of her, you know, with her angst over Megan. Enough is enough. You know, I'm so sick and tired of those two. Those two need to grow up.
It's a bizarre thing that in that country, right, and this is what we revolted against in the United States, it's just a bizarre thing for us to understand that those people are representatives of God on earth, right? That's what the English crown is. And it's very hard. It's very hard to wrap my head around that as being something that I can understand and respect. That being said, that's the pressure that their self-imposed titles give to them, and this is the pressure that, you know, it forces this family to do these things. It's absolutely crazy to me, and you know what? My whole attitude is hats off to Harry. Go live your life. Go raise your family, and be happy.
There you go, Joe Campbell, off the record, on the record. Joe, I'm going to throw one at you, okay? And that was what happened last week, the press conference, Suffolk County Police Department, Gilgo Beach, piece of evidence, the belt, HM, WH, H, I don't know, H something, whatever. You know, I had a problem with it. I didn't like it at all. 9 years plus, you're telling me you got a piece of evidence. Are you not telling me that you are getting ready for an appellate decision as far as the tapes are concerned, the Gilbert phone call when she made that call to the police department? What's on the tape, if anything? Was it erased? I want to know. You know, I mean, there's a lot of situations involved here. You got a Netflix movie debuting at Sundance on the 28th next Tuesday, streaming on Netflix March 13th. You know, it's almost like the police department in Suffolk County. I didn't like the body language at all of the police commissioner. I stated that on the show, and Geraldine Hart couldn't wait to get off the stage after 16 minutes. I mean, listen, you got a piece of evidence. You're showing to me on a picture on a piece of oak deck. All right? You couldn't even tell me the size of the darn belt. Nothing. No particulars or anything else. You know, I got to tell you, I didn't like it at all. I didn't like it at all. Very cheesy. This is of national proportions, this particular case. Police department did themselves no favors. And listen, I applaud them for their work. Tim Sini as well, DA. He's done a nice job with the gangs, the opioid crisis, the rounding up of some massive drug dealers. I get it. Gang members galore. But please, don't come on the air. The cameras around the country are on, and this is what you're telling us. You made the county look foolish. How are you holding the evidence for 9 years? You find the belt, you're holding it 9 years? I don't know. A little too coincidental for me, Joe.
I get it. I was kind of scratching my head when that was going on, and I was kind of wondering the same thing, you know. But if you think back, Jay, the Suffolk County Police Department and the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office were not exactly being run the right way back when this whole issue was surfaced initially. And we don't know what's happened over the past 9 years during all of that turmoil with the chief of police going to jail and the Suffolk County DA going to jail. We don't know. I do have a lot of respect and confidence for our chief law enforcement officers now. I think that they brought integrity to the police department. I think that they brought integrity to the district attorney's office. I sleep easier knowing that they're there and they're working hard. So I just have to trust that they have a strategy and a plan. But I totally agree with you that I was kind of scratching my head being like, well, what's the point here? What's going on? But I do want to trust that they have a plan and a reason for doing it the way that they you know, that they want to do it. And the people in Suffolk County really, if they focus on it, they really just have no idea. And the you know, the conviction of the Suffolk County District Attorney sort of should set a light bulb off in everybody's head. If the conviction of the chief of police didn't, the district attorney should, because those are supposed to be checks and balances on one another, as to sort of what was going on in this county for a long time. And it causes, especially as attorneys, it causes us a lot of agita, wondering how much injustice and misjustice was done during that time frame. And so I have confidence that these leaders have a strategy and are working towards, continuing that investigation and working towards some progress. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on this one, although it was a little weird, my friend. I'm not going to lie.
Listen, I'm a little uneasy with all the SPOTA trial, you know, the administration, as they called it, with Jimmy Burke, SPOTA, Chris McPartland. I'm a little uneasy about all of that. I go back, you know, Joe, here it is. You know, I'd like to see a little more transparency. That's all. Just a little more. You know, I hate to make comparisons, but what I see out of Pat Ryder as commissioner of Nassau County, you know, he gets out there. He's out there in the forefront. He tells the folks what's going on. I don't get that from this one, this commissioner. And I'd like to see a little more. Not everything. I understand investigations are critical and you can't show your cards. I get it. I'd like to see a little something, though. And I go back even to the young Justin Lugergo case, the kid who was, you know, pretty much kidnapped by his estranged father, taken across state lines and shot. Amber alerts issued. Were they botched? We never got a full reason on that. I go back. I can't get that one out of my head. So, I applaud the department. They've done great. Listen, nobody has more respect than Stu Cameron than I do, the chief. He's done a wonderful job over the years. The great work with the opioid, the heroin epidemic ongoing, the gangs, the roundup. It's all part of intelligence. It's coming together with other agencies. Phenomenal what they have done. This particular thing, they have dropped the ball completely. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they reveal to me the killer tomorrow. Maybe they will. Let's see. But all in all, right now, I'm scratching my head over this. So let's take a wait-and-see approach. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Jay, just to add on to that, so, you know, we talked about the legislative breakfast that that I was moderating last week, and County Executive Steve Ballone was there, and I had an opportunity to say to him, so you're entering your last term. What are you most proud of, and what do you want to accomplish, right? And this is a really, really important point, I think, for all of us to understand. And, you know, he spoke very eloquently, and I was very proud of his, you know, courage in speaking about how one of the things he's most proud of over the last 8 years is being able to guide the county through, you know, it's a very, very dark period where a police, you know, chief of police and a district attorney are both convicted for abusing their positions. And what he said, and so, you know, people don't realize that we had a huge, huge, huge red flag as to what was going on, and nobody ever took the opportunity, okay, to focus on it and understand how corrupt it really was. And Steve Ballone said, you have a prosecutor, okay, who forced a county executive out of office, forced him not to run again, took away the money he raised, and then made it a condition that county executive couldn't say anything about anything, or else the deal was off. Normally, it's a defendant in a prosecution that wants confidentiality. Here, the district attorney was forcing confidentiality, okay, which is unprecedented and stinks. You know it's politics. And I got to tell you, and so, you know, I've been friends with Steve Levy. When this all went down, you know, we took Steve in to our firm right away because I knew it was politics. And you know what? Out of respect and friendship for Steve, he's remained silent. He did speak to Newsday after Steve Ballone had made those comments. But to not have called that out when that happened as pure, blatant politics and using a prosecutor in the wrong way for politics was absolutely disgraceful at that time. And everybody missed that boat because Steve had just changed parties to become a Republican, okay? And everybody was mad about that, and it helped people out politically. And nobody focused on the fact, and Steve wasn't able to talk, and his people weren't able to talk, and nobody focused on the fact that we had a prosecutor forcing a county executive out of office, okay, in a deal that the prosecutor required remain silent, all right? And I had no problem welcoming Steve into our firm at that time, because I know Steve, and Steve couldn't be bought. So he wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing anything terrible. He may have made a mistake, but he wasn't doing anything terrible. I knew it was politics, and we all missed the boat about what was going on back then. You know, and I was so happy and proud that Steve Ballone recognized that, and that Steve Levy was able to speak about it, because shame on them for forcing good people out of politics by using a prosecutorial office. You want to talk about really, really terrible things to do? Those are really, really terrible things to do. And then testimony came out about how the prosecutors were following Steve Ballone, and it just was terrible, terrible stuff. A really, really dark cloud, and it really is important that we've gotten past that as a county.
A lot of questions still. I like Steve. He's a friend. No choir boy to me, at least, as far as some of the goings-on, Joe, as far as that money is concerned. So a lot of questions, but you're right. I mean, listen, I remember when Levy came on board, he did some great things with this county. A lot of people forget that. Trimmed the budget and everything else, the police cars and everything. I remember a lot of those good things. You know, a lot of those things Steve did, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for these days. You know, people like to admonish people based on some of the negativity rather than some of the positives. But that's a whole nother discussion for another day. That's an interesting subject, though, no question. That's a good job by you, by the way, confronting him like that, no question. A couple of good things. You know, I found out, and I can't believe Mr. Campolo did not drop me a line on this, that your firm was recognized by Forbes, are you kidding me, as one of America's top trusted corporate law firms, only 243 out of the more than 40,000 in the United States. Less than 1% were named to that list. That's quite an accomplishment, sir.
Yeah, we're super, super proud, and I was holding it to surprise you today and give some good news. We're super, super proud of it. I mean, our corporate team, and it's led by my partner Christine Malafi, who chairs it, and Don Rassiker, who manages it. Our corporate team is bar none, an A plus. We put them against any corporate team in any other law firm. And I've always known this, so I didn't need Forbes to tell us that we were one of the best and brightest in the country and in the world, you know. But Forbes put us through their process and named us as one of them, much to the chagrin of many of our competitors. I've always known it. It brings me a lot of joy that the world now knows what I already knew about Christine and Don and the team and how hard they work and how great the results are that they're able to get for clients. So hats off to them, and just, you know, another stepping stone for CMM, that's for sure.
That is humble. That's a great accomplishment, Joe. And, of course, the breakfast, you know, we had a couple of our guys there. They raved about it. A lot of people came up to LI News Radio. We appreciate that. That was just a wonderful day. You had a wonderful panel discussion and everything else. We mentioned some of the names. That's a great job by you guys. I hope you have more of those in the future, too.
Yeah, we're working on it, my friend. We're working on it. Believe me, we're working hard this year.
That is a good thing. And, of course, a lot of new hires this year. I know you're seeking a lot of talent, lots of positions with the new office soon to be expanded, Ronkonkoma headquarters, huh?
Yep, the build-out's almost completed. We're adding another 3,500 feet there, so that'll bring us to 18,500 feet in Ronkonkoma. We're already full in Westbury, so we're looking to find new space in there. And there is news about some new office coming soon. If I could just get the damn lease signed, I'd be able to release that. But that should be any day now. So we're pretty excited about that.
Any hints, sir? Any hints?
Well, somewhere between Ronkonkoma and Bridgehampton.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. That means Summit County to me. All right, so that's good. All righty. I'll get it out of you later. Don't worry about it. Listen. Hey, listen, a pleasure to have you. And I look for, I tell you, Joe, enough to talk about this morning. What do you think?
Great stuff, man. Great stuff. Always appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, brother.